The Public Interest Advocacy Centre, or PIAC, welcomes the opportunity to give evidence today to the Herriok Same-Sex Entitlements Hearing and congratulates Herriok on this inquiry. I am Jo Shulman, I'm the Equality Solicitor at PIAC, and with me is Vijay Raman, the Human Rights Policy Officer at PIAC. PIAC is an independent, non-profit law and policy centre based in Sydney. PIAC makes strategic, legal and policy interventions in matters that raise issues of broad public importance, that is, matters that have an impact beyond the particular rights and interests of the individual. Within that very broad charter, we focus on particular areas, including discrimination on the basis of sexuality. In the course of that work, we have run cases and lobbied for legislative change to address discrimination against people in same-sex relationships. Much of our casework has focused on cases potentially outside the ambit of this inquiry, such as discrimination against same-sex couples applying to be foster carers and homosexual vilification. This work has indicated to us that all areas where gay, lesbians, bisexuals and people of transgender status are treated unequally need to be addressed in order to achieve substantive equality. Our submission to Herriok looks at where Australia sits globally in relation to discrimination against same-sex couples. Today we wish to speak to you specifically about a number of the issues raised in our submission. Vijay will speak to Australia's obligations under international law. He will also look at international best practice and will outline how Australia is behind many developed countries in not guaranteeing equality of treatment regardless of sexuality. I will then speak to some of our recommendations, in particular in relation to the recommendation that there be federal anti-discrimination legislation rendering unlawful discrimination on the basis of sexuality.
Thanks, Jo. In our submission, PIAC drew the Commission's attention to international treaties that provide some guidance on the issue of same-sex financial and workplace entitlements. In fact, our opening referenced Article 1 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which states all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Australia was in fact a leading member of the UN General Assembly that adopted and proclaimed the UDHR in 1948, an historical fact that should be remembered in the current political climate. PIAC notes that other submissions also address the range of relevant international treaties, and for the purposes of today we'll be speaking briefly on the Convention on the Rights of the Child, CROC, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, ICCPR, and the Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW. We note that the role of international treaties in Australian domestic law is a contentious issue. However, whilst the ICCPR and CROC have not been fully implemented in Australian domestic law, both treaties have been scheduled to the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission Act. Though the High Court has stated this falls short of domestic incorporation, these treaties may have some impact on Australian law. PIAC notes that the full Court of the Family Court held in B&B and Minister for Immigration and Multicultural and Indigenous Affairs that scheduling a treaty, in this case CROC, to the Herriok Act afforded the treaty special significance in Australian law. And of course the High Court in Minister for Immigration and Ethnic Affairs and TO has found that ratification of a treaty without implementation into domestic law and in the absence of domestic law to the contrary gives rise to a legitimate expectation that an administrative decision maker will act in conformity with the ratified treaty. We heard earlier today that a clear impact of discrimination against same-sex couples is on children. PIAC highlighted in its submission Australia's obligations under CROC and expressed its concern that arguably Australia is in breach of some of these obligations. CROC, to which Australia is a state party, is guided by four fundamental principles. The best interest of the child is the primary consideration in all actions concerning the child. Non-discrimination, that children have the right to survival and development and the right to express their own views and have such views taken into account in all matters that affect them. Under Article 2 of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, all rights under the Convention must be applied equally to all children. However, the protection actually goes further in that it is a general protection against all forms of discrimination, including on the basis of the type of family a child comes from. The Committee on the Rights of the Child has identified numerous grounds for discrimination in its examination of state party reports, including such things as the sexual orientation of children, non-marital children, children of single parents, children of marriages between people of different ethnic and religious groups, children of parents with HIV/AIDS, and social status, social disadvantage, or social disparities. Whilst to date there has not been any specific international case law of discrimination against children of same-sex parents, the Committee on the Rights of the Child has repeatedly expressed concern with discrimination against children on the basis of the type of family they come from. In its general guidelines on the form and content of periodic reports by state parties, the committee seeks information from state parties on steps taken to ensure that discrimination is prevented and combated both in law and practice, including discrimination on the basis of race, colour, sex, language, religion, political opinion, national, ethnic or social origin, property, disability, birth or other status of the child, her or his parents or legal guardians. The committee takes a broad view of what constitutes a family and has stated, when considering the family environment, the convention reflects different structures arising from various cultural patterns and emerging familial relationships. At the same time, the Human Rights Committee, responsible for monitoring implementation of the ICCPR, has found that the concept of the family may differ in some respects from state to state, and even from region to region within a state, and it is therefore not possible to give the concept a standard definition. Based on the above, it is safe to assume that the discrimination suffered by children from a same-sex family would fall within the ambit of CROC and the committee, and arguably then it is a breach of CROC if children of same-sex partners are denied their rights under CROC and or suffer discrimination. Two further points are relevant here. Firstly, Article 18, which talks about parents' joint responsibilities assisted by the state, Article 5, which discusses parental family duties and the rights of the child, Article 3 and Article 27, which talk about state responsibilities to assist parents in securing that children have adequate protection and care and a standard of living, make clear that while parents have primary responsibility for securing the best interests of the child, the state must take appropriate steps to assist parents in fulfilling these responsibilities. These include such things as provision of daycare services, employment benefits including maternity, paternity leave and pay, and family-sensitive working conditions. Secondly, Article 26 discusses the child's right to benefit from social security. When adults who have responsibility for children are unable to provide for them, the state has an obligation to ensure that the child has some form of financial support. The duty imposed on states implies that they must take active measures to ensure that there is a full take-up of social security entitlements where appropriate, which includes such things as public information campaigns, but also effective and applicant-friendly benefit systems and procedures. Finally, PIEC notes that a child's right to express their own views and have such views taken into account is a key principle of CROC, and we would encourage the Commission to actively seek to listen to the voices of children of same-sex parents, both in terms of hearing of their experiences and seeking their guidance in suggesting measures of reform. The ICCPR affirms the equality of all people before the law and the right to freedom from anti-discrimination in Articles 2 and 26. While Article 2 confines the rights protected against discrimination to those under the ICCPR, the Human Rights Committee has found that the application of the principle of non-discrimination contained in Article 26 is not limited. Article 26 provides an autonomous right that prohibits discrimination in law or in fact in any field regulated and protected by public authorities. The Human Rights Committee continued in the general comment to observe that discrimination should be understood to encompass any distinction, exclusion, restriction, or preference based on any identified ground that has the effect, that has the purpose or effect of nullifying or impairing the recognition, enjoyment, or exercise by all persons on an equal footing of all rights and freedoms. In 1994, the Human Rights Committee found in Nicholas Toonen and Australia that laws punishing consensual sexual conduct between adult males violated protections against discrimination under the ICCPR. The Human Rights Committee held that sexual orientation was a status protected from discrimination under the ICCCPR, specifically finding that the reference to sex in Articles 2 and 26 should be taken to include sexual orientation. Thus, states could not abridge the enjoyment of human rights on the basis of sexual orientation. The Human Rights Committee reaffirmed its findings in Edward Young and Australia, where it found that Australia had violated Article 26 of the ICCPR by denying Edward Young a pension on the basis of his sex or sexual orientation. It follows from this jurisprudence that involvement in a same-sex relationship is a prohibited ground for discrimination under the ICCPR, The Human Rights Committee has found that differentiation is permissible where based on reasonable and objective criteria, and where the aim of this is to achieve a purpose that is legitimate under the covenant. Accordingly, where access to financial and workplace entitlements and benefits are concerned, any differential treatment for those in same-sex relationships will be a form of prohibited non-discrimination under the ICCPR unless reasonable and objective criteria within the meaning of international jurisprudence can be demonstrated for the differentiation. This is the question that the Human Rights Committee considered in Young versus Australia. The committee affirmed that Article 26 of the ICCPR was breached where financial entitlements flowed to members of a heterosexual de facto relationship that were not available to members of the same-sex relationships. Here, the only difference between the two was that one involved members of the opposite sex and the other involved members of the same sex. Therefore, PIAC submits Australia's failure to ensure equal access to workplace and financial entitlements to same-sex couples is arguably a breach of the ICCPR. PIAC also conducted an examination of different international responses to the issue of discrimination against same-sex couples. The general approach has been the progressive implementation of measures to address equality for same-sex couples, followed by enactment of anti-discrimination legislation right through to full recognition of same-sex unions and, in some cases, marriage. This analysis accords with Associate Professor Jenny Milbank's findings that generally countries have followed a path along the lines of decriminalisation of gay sex, anti-discrimination protections, limited recognition in some areas, and then through one or more stages a move to a broader relationship recognition, then some parenting recognition, then a status exactly the same as marriage but called something else, then marriage. PIAC highlighted the examples of Canada, New Zealand, UK, Europe, South Africa and Fiji, which have utilised anti-discrimination and equality provisions under their constitutions or legislation, both at a national and state provincial level. As noted, in many of these countries, these measures eventually led to the legal recognition of same-sex relationships. We also highlighted other states that are further along the road to equality. These included Denmark, Finland, France, Iceland, the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden and Norway. It should be noted that these states also initially utilised anti-discrimination equality provisions. It is also clear from the analysis that those countries with bills of rights are generally ahead of the pack, the US being the exception. And whilst outside the ambit of this inquiry, PIAC notes that Australia is the only industrialised nation in the world without a national Bill of Rights. PIAC believes that today's inquiry is yet another example that highlights the important role an Australian Bill of Rights could play in protecting, respecting and fulfilling the human rights of every Australian. What is most telling about these case studies is where Australia sits in relation to many of these countries. Unfortunately, Australia clearly sits towards the bottom of this spectrum, not even having legislative protection against discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation at a federal level. Thank you.
Thanks. I'll just briefly speak to some of our recommendations. PIAC submits that the amendment of state, territory and federal legislation governing financial and workplace entitlements to ensure equality for same-sex couples is a starting point only. These amendments will not address the discrimination occurring outside of workplace and financial benefits, for example, in education. These amendments will not address indirect discrimination, they will not address vilification, and they will not address discrimination on the basis of sexuality or transgender status. Given what we have heard today about the disadvantage experienced by this community, we believe that the federal government should take the opportunity to address these broader forms of discrimination. And in relation to this, PIAC has made four additional recommendations. Firstly, the passage of federal anti-discrimination legislation rendering unlawful discrimination on the basis of sexuality. Secondly, an amendment to Section 4 of the Sex Discrimination Act in relation to the definition of de facto spouse, so that same-sex partners can achieve equal protection to de facto heterosexual partners in relation to discrimination on the basis of marital status. Thirdly, an amendment to Section 5 of the Marriage Act so that the definition of marriage includes same-sex partners and/or the recognition of civil unions at a federal level. I will focus on the first two recommendations, as the other two are perhaps better dealt with organisations who profess expertise in the area. Firstly, I'll just talk briefly about the passage of federal anti-discrimination legislation rendering unlawful discrimination on the basis of sexuality. In elaborating on this recommendation, I wish to refer to the recommendations of the Senate Legal and Constitutional Affairs Committee report on the inquiry into sexuality discrimination, which was completed in December 1997. I note that its primary recommendation was that the federal government pass the Sexuality and Gender Status Discrimination Bill. This recommendation was not acted on. However, its reasoning still applies. A federal discrimination act would be a means of formally meeting Australia's international obligations and gaining international standing. This is particularly important when we note, as Vijay stated, that Australia is the only developed country other than the United States of America which does not have federal discrimination legislation prohibiting discrimination on the basis of homosexuality. A federal discrimination act would also provide a standard for Australia at a federal level, which would overcome less progressive law at state and territory levels. And although all state and territories outlaw discrimination on the basis of sexuality, the standard is uneven between states, so it would provide some certainty. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, a federal discrimination act on the basis of sexuality would perhaps send a symbolic message that gays and lesbians are worthy of protection, and that the federal government thinks that they are. This is especially an important tool in addressing violence and abuse against gays and lesbians. PIAC also recommended that the Sex Discrimination Act be amended so that it is unlawful to discriminate against same-sex partners on the basis of marital status. Section 6 of the Sex Discrimination Act prohibits discrimination on the basis of marital status, including discrimination against a de facto spouse. However, Section 4 of the Sex Discrimination Act defines de facto spouse as a person of the opposite sex. Accordingly, people in same-sex relationships are not protected against discrimination on the basis of their relationship. In our submission, we made an argument that by not protecting against discrimination against same-sex couples under the Sex Discrimination Act, Australia was potentially not meeting its international obligations under the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW. CEDAW, like other international conventions, does not specifically refer to lesbians. However, based on comments of the CEDAW Committee and the Beijing Platform for Action, it can be said that CEDAW protects discrimination against lesbians, or at the very least, same-sex couples, and I can elaborate on this further if you like. Regardless of international obligations, this is another area where Commonwealth laws, through the definition of spouse, discriminates against same-sex partners. And this is particularly concerning when the aim of the Sex Discrimination Act is to protect human rights, not to infringe them. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, in the second of those recommendations about amending the Sex Discrimination Act, have you given any thought to the constitutional issues that might arise?
We have not, no. And I'm sure there probably are some.
And in relation to your first recommendation about a general law rendering unlawful discrimination on the grounds of sexuality, In what ways, if any, were you proposing to limit that to the fields of activity? You were going to limit it to areas of public undertaking similar to the sex discrimination?
It probably should be similar to the Sex Discrimination Act, and I could imagine that without an amendment to the Marriage Act, it probably would need to contain some certain exemptions in it as well, and potentially an exemption that appears in the state anti-discrimination acts in relation to complying with other laws.
Thank you. Vijay, you gave us a very interesting argument about the scope of CROC in dealing with discrimination on the basis of the parents being the same-sex relationship. Have you got any specific authority on that, or are we just dependent upon the argument that you put that we could interpret the conventions in a way that would arrive at that result?
As I said, I think it's based more on interpreting statements from the Committee on the Rights of the Child and looking at the articles and when they were drafted. As I said, there hasn't been much in the international field on this issue. And I presumably, based on what I've said, if the matter was brought, I think, to the Committee on the Rights of the Child, brought to their attention, I think they would have the scope to look at the issue.
Thank you. Graham, are there issues that you would raise?
I was just going to go to the ICCPR comments that you made. You note the affirmation of the equality of all people before the law and the right to freedom from discrimination, the Articles 10 and 26. Could you explain the difference in approach to the discrimination between 2 and 26, as you see it, and which of these provides the most useful basis, do you think, for consideration of discrimination by people experienced by people in same-sex relationships?
The main difference that we noted between the two articles was that, I mean, firstly, the Article 2 confines itself to the rights under the ICCPR, whereas Article 26 is a much more general protection. Mm. The approach that we basically took, I think, was that the approach of Article 26 would be preferred in the sense of all persons being equal before the law. Was, I think, the basic.
I think so, but perhaps we could have a bit more of a think about it.
Okay.
Back to you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed for the effort you put into that. A very useful submission. Thank you very much. Mm.